Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today we're joined by Samuel Brenner. Guided by his motto, the harder you work, the luckier you get, Sam is living proof of how determination and ambition lead to incredible outcomes. Sam launched his recruitment agency, CRB Workforce, in 2018 from his apartment. And since then, the business has grown rapidly to a team of 16 people recruiting technology and marketing across multiple sectors throughout the U.S. and beyond. Sam, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mark. That was a great intro.
Okay. I appreciate that. So listen, tell me the story of how you got into recruiting.
All right. It's actually kind of interesting. I was in commercial real estate for a company called Cushman & Wakefield out of Denver, and I was working as a broker with the top producing team. It was great. It was my first job out of college, and I started dating my wife at the time. Obviously, we were dating. She's from Brazil, and she had been accepted into a master's program in Barcelona. And it was like, you know, are we going to actually be together? You know, she's going to Barcelona. And I just wasn't feeling overly satisfied with what I was doing. And so one of the main industries that I was servicing was representing staffing agencies in their acquisition of office space. And so I had this kind of strange connection to staffing. And so I up and quit my job. My parents were furious and thought I was crazy. All my friends thought I was crazy. I basically retired for year and a half, moved to Barcelona. And so when we decided where we were going to live, after she finished, we moved to Orange County. And one of my clients at Cushman & Wakefield was this, was my former employer. And he's a staffing agency, and him and I had been talking, and he said, you know, why don't you come try out staffing? And I never really believed that you could make a lot of money in the industry. It just didn't occur to me. I was used to, you know, commercial real estate, you make big $500,000, $1 million fees, right? The deal takes forever, but they're big fees. And so I didn't believe that recruiting had that potential, and eventually he convinced me. I think I was 3 or 4 months into living in Newport Beach, and I was honestly, I was just bored. So we agreed to, like, I think it was 60 or 90 days. Like, if I'm terrible, I'll quit. And if, you know, if I don't like it, I can quit, and no harm, no foul. So I started, you know, I walked into the office day one, and, by the end of the first week, I think I was telling my wife, I guess still fiance at that point, that I loved it. It was insane. I was talking to some top billers. I saw how much they were making, and I was like, this is great, and I can crush this. So that's kind of how I got into it.
All right. Amazing. Yeah. How did you like Barcelona?
Barcelona was probably the best year of my life. I mean, I've traveled a lot, but it was such a unique experience living abroad for an extended amount of time. Your whole view of the world, of culture, changes completely. We'd go out to dinner at 9:30, and it was just like, that doesn't happen here in the U.S. You're in bed. Last night, I went to sleep at like 8:45. I put my daughter to sleep, and yep. You know, like, I couldn't imagine going out. And so it was such an experience. I loved it.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been there before. It's a fantastic city. We have clients there as well. And that's a cool place. And we also have clients in Brazil, actually.
Yeah.
So shout out to Fabio and Philip at Find HR in Brazil. So.
Where in Brazil?
They're
are
in
they?
Sao Paulo.
Sao Paulo. Okay. Cool.
Cool. Fantastic. All right. So listen. So you got into recruiting. You realized, like, when you said you were giving yourself 60 to 90 days to kind of decide, am I any good at this? So when did it kind of click that, hey, I actually like this. I'm good at it. You know, what was that tipping point?
That's interesting. I don't know if I could pin a specific tipping point. I know that the first probably 60 days were really exciting. I loved kind of I kind of got in doing full desk, but primarily business development on the contract side. And I remember those first 60 days were just so cool talking to people that actually wanted to talk to you. Coming from commercial real estate, you're calling on CEOs and CFOs that don't want to talk to you. And I loved the value prop that, that we were offering, people. I loved that idea. And so the first 60 days were like kind of like heartwarming. Like I liked what I was doing. And then I think the biggest tipping point, I guess, for me is after I demonstrated, I'm not an entry-level sales guy. I'm not a young kid. I knew what I was doing. I could impact other people. The CEO asked me to move to LA and take over his LA office and grow that LA office. So, he moved my wife and I up to LA. It was in between 60 and 90 days. And I met with everyone there and I ended up letting go of most of the office. I kept one guy who works for me today at CRB. So I started doing business development in that office. We were starting from ground zero. And when I signed our first enterprise client, I think that was another 30 to 45 days from that. That was the tipping point that propelled my career in staffing and recruiting.
Fantastic. When was this, Sam?
Okay, so 2014, we moved back to the US. I think I started in September or so in the Orange County office in November-ish. So maybe July I started. November, I moved up to LA.
2014. Okay.
2014.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
So then fast forward to 2018,
Okay.
you launched your own business. Talk us through like starting up your own recruitment agency, what that was like.
Yeah. It was exciting and scary at the same time.
I
I
totally get
was
that.
yeah, I was the number one producer at my former agency, and there was just nowhere, I was the number one producer. Our office was crushing it. I wanted to do more. I wanted to help other people, grow their businesses. And money has never been my major guiding principle. I've always been able to make a lot, but I just wanted to help other people make more money. And so, the biggest fear for me was that I wasn't going to be able to replicate what I had done, and then I was going to fail and miss out, having left my entire team, basically just fail into, non-existence and kind of set myself back 4.5 years. That was kind of the biggest,
Totally. I mean, that's nor anyone starting a business goes through that emotional roller coaster, right? Because it is exciting and terrifying in equal measure. And but it's that fear of failure that kind of drives you, like, you can't, like, just thinking, I cannot let that happen. I have to make this work because otherwise, it's almost like, well, obviously there's the financial risk and feeling like you've gone backwards instead of forwards, but it's also more just like the embarrassment or the sense of like, yeah, feeling like a failure, like you left a something, a successful business, and then you couldn't make it work, in your own business, and just, yeah, that would be horrible. So that's kind of in the back of your mind, like, right, is that fear of
Was it
failure.
exactly? Well, was it me who was successful, or was it me as part of the machine?
Right,
Without the
exactly.
machine, but it was cool. The first 6 months were like wild. It was just grind, grind. I was making, I don't know, I was probably doing 10, we call them pre-screens, so talking to candidates, 10 a day. I was just like knocking those out. Then I'm making, 150 cold calls. I'm working like crazy, and I get a little bit of momentum. And I'm kind of fast forwarding, but I hire a guy. I hire at this point, this is probably 8 months in. I've got a team of maybe three or four people, and we had moved into an office at this point. And I'm sitting there, and I won't bore you with the details, but I get this. I get notified that I'm about to be sued, and
Uh-oh.
that was the worst day of my life. So.
So wait a sec. Let's just drill down a little bit here. So when did you do your first deal? Because if you already had two or three people 8 months in, then you must have been doing well. That was a fast startup.
No, we've our growth has been wild. Not necessarily just in internal people. We've got a big contractor workforce. But yeah, I mean, I did my first deal in, I don't know, 30 to 45 days. I mean, it was quick.
Awesome.
I knew the roadmap. I had plenty of customers that, that were reaching out to me asking me to help.
Great. So then you got threatened with a lawsuit. What was that all about?
Well, I wasn't just threatened, I was sued. And that lasted about 2.5 years.
Oh my gosh, that's
It was brutal, but the net result is we all signed non-disclosure, non-disparagement agreements. So, like the reality is that obviously I had left and started a new company, and they weren't pleased with losing me, and they weren't pleased with the competition. And I get it. And so everyone's happy. 2.5, th this was, I don't even know when it ended, but at the end of it, everyone was happy. We all moved on with our lives. And I remember maybe 6 months into it when I felt like the world was over, right? Like they are going to demolish me. I'm going to be bankrupt. They're going to take all my hard-earned money from even before them. And I think it was my brother or somebody sat me down and he's like, dude, he's like, not one successful person has never been sued. And it just hit me. I'm like, all right, this is a rite of passage. And we got through it.
A good reframe. It's good to have supportive people in your corner. So, okay, wow. That's it sounds like it was a roller coaster. So that was hanging over you for 2.5 years. What? So then, looking at today, you said you have a big contractor book. How many consultants do you have out working?
Yeah, we've got it's either just over or just under. I haven't looked this week, but it's 70-ish.
Okay, wow. And then do you guys also do executive search and permanent placements as well, don't you?
We do. We historically our revenue has been about 70% contract, 30% direct hire, and then our volume of transaction has been like 70% direct hire, 30% contract. So we do, long-term high-paying contract placements.
That's the best kind.
I know, right? It is. We have some really great customers, and that has been growing. Our direct hire, as you probably know, well, maybe you don't, and you didn't experience it, but our direct hire business this last 12 months has just been demolished, and it's been really hard.
Okay, I definitely would like to dig into that because. Yeah, I'm hearing that from a lot of recruiters, especially in tech, that it's hard going at the moment. So let me just make a note that we're going to circle
Sure.
back to that, the like current market and conditions and that sort of stuff. So, when you say long-term high-paying consultants, what does that mean? What's long-term look like in your world?
I'd say anything over 12 months, but we have some customers that have kept people, I think, over 4 years. I mean,
Wow, fantastic.
it's, it's easy when you have a great customer, they want to work there. The consultant contractor is easy, wants to be there. And then, a lot of what we've done, what I've done, and the purpose of, how I structured our organization was to guarantee that our people, our contractors, and internal teams stuck around. And so, like, at the end of the day, no one's going to work for, say, I won't name anyone, but say a recruiting agency that treats them like contractors, right? They're
Right.
not going to
Okay.
stick around forever.
Say more about that. So, what are some of the things that you've done to create those relationships with your contractors so they really feel well looked after and they want to stick around?
That's a good question. I mean, so when I that was one of the big issues I had when I was starting CRB, that I was coming to CRB with that as a preeminent problem that I wanted to solve, was that contractor experience. So I've iterated this so much over the last 5 years at this point, but our onboarding process is like second to none. I mean, you would think we specialize in onboarding. So from the minute they accept an offer with us to the day that they walk on site or remote at this point, that experience is amazing. And like, not just anecdotally, like we've implemented, kind of a white glove service. We have great systems for onboarding. We've implemented amazing benefits, the exact same benefits internal employees get, external employees get. So it's like 90% healthcare paid. They can even get 100% if they use our silver plan, but the gold is 90% health, dental, vision. We offer that, and that's effective on the first of the month following their start date. So if they started today, their benefits would kick in December 1st, which is not typical in recruiting. 401k we offer that, and we do a match. We do a 3% dollar for dollar up to 4%. That's also not really typical. If it is, it's like you have to be there a year to be eligible. Ours is on the 91st day. And then, we have a high, I kind of, I don't know when it was, but I had this revelation that like Jeff Bezos and Amazon does things like the absolute best way, and they have this like insane focus on the customer. And so, that's kind of our approach with contractors. It's like always hit them up, always figure out what they need. And they can't do like, it's like you don't like what showed up on your door from Prime, you just ship it back. They take care of it, right? It's like, and if you need something as a contractor, we will do whatever we can to make sure that you walk away happy.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a, I love the philosophy. Tell me about this onboarding though, because like what in practical terms, what does that really look like?
So our internal ops team, basically from the minute that they sign an offer letter, they're getting a email that kind of outlines exactly what the process is going to be. From there, they get an email from our payroll system. We use Paylocity, and Paylocity's that we started on ADP, we went to Paycom, and now we're on Paylocity. And Paylocity was chosen for a handful of reasons. One being their integration aspect with all of our other systems, which improves that experience. But then two, being their onboarding process. And so, you know, they once they start in Paylocity, everything's kind of loaded in there. They fill out what they need to, obviously, standard stuff. And then from there, it gets handed off to our benefits administration team, which is a platform called EASE, EASE. And that helps them, it guides them through the miserable process of electing benefits. And it's an amazing user experience on that platform. And then when they complete benefits, there's a handful of other steps that are all kind of integrated. And that entire onboarding process can go as fast or as slow as they want. If someone's on it, they can be done with onboarding in literally a day. And you know, if they want to take their time, it can be a week. It does, you know, it's all up to them. But you know, we've just really tried to maximize the efficiency and efficacy of that from the minute they sign that offer to the day they start their new job.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, apart from the lawsuit, like, what are some of the other setbacks that you experienced kind of leading up to where you are today?
Well, I don't know if we have enough time to go over all of them. But I think another big setback I've had is like is hiring. Well, I should say letting go of people that are not the right fit. I have this, you know, I love people. It's I'm an introvert and I don't like talking to people in general. But I have like a deep sense of love for people. And so I tend to keep people around for too long. I just believe that they can change or they can get better. And so I've had a handful of, you know, issues, not issues, but I've had a handful of fails over time with, you know, bringing someone in who had all the right attitude, the right effort, and then it wasn't clicking. I could see they were unhappy, but I just kept giving them opportunity. And yeah, I probably kept them around for maybe 6, 8 months too long. So that's been a big learning experience for me.
You know what? That's so common among the clients that we work with is we do tend to work with people who are not ruthless in business. They love people and they want to try and develop people, right? And then, you know, which I think is a good overall is going to serve you more than the opposite, right? But the downside is you can hold on to people for too long. How have you adapted either your leadership style or your decision making or your systems in order to address that and either, you know, support people in performing to their potential or recognize that it's not working earlier? Have you changed anything?
I think it depends on who you ask. I think there's, you know, maybe some people that would say I haven't changed a bunch, and I'm still a softie, but like what I've done, knowing that that's one of my weaknesses, is I tried to insulate myself a little bit, and what I'm really good at is motivating and setting strategy and direction and all of the things that I enjoy doing. But so I've tried to insulate myself from having to look at people, look at my team in that capacity and letting someone else kind of take more of an objective view. And so, you know, I've hired management, I've hired you know, leadership under me that the team generally reports into. And you know, I let them, it's a big belief of mine is offering people what we call, it's one of our core values, freedom and responsibility. And part of that, it, you know, it's all of the people who work for me, you know, should live that. But also, you know, I I try not to meddle in decisions that should be made at the managing director level. If there's a people process, item that they want to make and they want to bring someone in, let someone go, that's their call, right? I can meddle, but that's not, it shouldn't be my call. And so I give them that freedom, and people generally make the right calls.
Fantastic. Well, let's dig into that then. Like, culture, I know, is something that's really important to you. You mentioned values, freedom, responsibility. And so you guys are 100% remote, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. And this is really a challenge. How do you create culture when people aren't physically, in the same room, so how have you solved that puzzle?
Oh, it's tough. And it's a puzzle that, like, it just decides to throw away random pieces when you're getting close. So I don't know if I've solved it, but I think we go toe to toe for the best, if not one of the best cultures in, the staffing industry. We have a very low attrition rate, and so the ways that when I think about culture, I think about like what makes our culture successful. I'd say the things that I do to affect that culture are really maybe four or five key things. The first for me is I'm 100% an open book. Anyone has any question about the business, about a strategy, anyone on the team can call me at any point and ask any question they want. And I try to also lead in that conversation and offer that information. And I do that because if we were in an office, we would have the opportunity to have those kind of intimate conversations just by passing by each other in the hallway. And if I don't push that as something that's important to me, then our conversations end up being, tactical every single day. And so I really press that, I'm an open book, and I'm reaching out to people and having those, conversations that you wouldn't normally have with a day-to-day employee. So that's kind of one that sets the premise. The second biggest one for me is trust. Being remote, who knows what people do at home, right? And so I have a philosophy that I give them 100% trust day one, and under no circumstance do I question anything until they break that trust. And so it's just authentic. I trust you. You say you're doing this, you're doing, I it doesn't matter. I don't want to check up on you. And if someone wants to go to the store or do something during the day, they're remote. Great, right? Like, get the job done. That's kind of second is I offer that trust. And then the other big thing is, like, I try to focus on people that really want my help. And I tell everyone, being remote can be pretty isolating. And so I tell everybody that they have to have this philosophy of push your way in, don't wait to be pulled in. And
Can you
that's
explain
re
that?
yeah. So push your way in, don't wait to be pulled in. Like, if someone's sitting there struggling or they're unsure of what to do next, maybe they've built a list and they don't know what to do next. If they sit around and they wait for me to call them or wait for their lead or their managing director to call them, they're going to be waiting all day, right? Like, they don't, that it's, we're not in the office. You can't lean over and say, John, can you help me out? Right? Like, so I tell them, push your way in, be proactive. Don't sit around hoping, don't wait to be pulled in. Don't sit around hoping for someone to recognize you need help, because it's not going to happen. And so with that, I see that people are proactively reaching out to other people, and they're jumping on, we call them work sessions, work sesh, where, three, four, five different recruiters and salespeople will just jump on a Zoom and do their job, but be in on a Zoom working together and asking questions and having fun.
Oh, so wait a sec. Let me double click on that. So first of all, I get now what you mean by push away, and you're saying people need to proactively ask for help because otherwise you won't know that they need support or they need clarity on something, right? So of course that makes sense. It's their responsibility if they're struggling or if they get stuck, they need to reach out and get help. But I love this idea of your co-working with people remotely. So they dial into Zoom and they're just doing their own thing, and but they're working together, but just not in the same office. How does, so I've heard of this, but I've never really tried it. How is it working for you?
It works great. I mean,
Okay.
it's amazing. And the key with that is to have an agenda and to keep it short. And so what I mean by keep it short is, don't sit on Zoom all day with someone. Schedule a meeting for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, and have that block be open, and then have an agenda. Like, here is what we're going to do together. And we're all going to, work on building a new business development list, right? Everyone's doing the same thing. And so if you see something creative in your process, you bring it up. You kind of, and so then other people kind of try it, or then someone will jump in and say, "Hey, let me show you this," and they'll share their screen. And it's let me I just got a call. Sorry about that. And so it's kind of neat to see, so you put that agenda in place. Everyone has the same expectation of what they're going to do. Recruiters, maybe they're all going to source on the same role, and so people are trying different bullions and talking about what they just tried. And so it's a really neat concept that they love.
That sounds awesome. I like it. It's almost like it's focus time as well, right? It's blocked out and they have to focus in on whatever the agreed, activity is that they're going to participate in. I guess it wouldn't really work for phone-based or meeting-based stuff, right? Because that would be
They do it
noisy.
also. No,
Oh,
they
do
do
they?
that
Oh,
too.
sick.
Yeah.
Tell
Oh
me about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, no, they just jump on Zoom. They've got their lists, and everyone's making dials. And
Okay.
if someone gets so if there's a connect, someone answers, everyone knows to mute themselves, and then everyone listens to this cold call. And it's awesome because you get instant feedback like you would in the office. And then the other interesting part that I've seen is by being on Zoom, you have basically a mirror that you can look at, and people look at themselves when they're on video,
Of course they do. It's funny, isn't it?
I
That's,
know,
yeah.
right? I have to block my window. Otherwise I just look at myself, and it's like, I try not to, but you do it. So I block mine, like I put something over it. But if you're on a cold call and you're looking at yourself, and I used to do this back in the day when I was on the book, is I'd put a mirror in front of me, a small mirror. If you're doing that, you tend to smile, and you've got your team looking at you, and you're looking at yourself, and these cold calls go so well.
Interesting. So this is new. I've not heard of this, Sam, before. So people are, so on Zoom, how many people are we talking about that might do this together?
I'd say at any given time it's four,
Okay.
maybe five, could be
Okay.
three.
Or it could be two, right? You could buddy
could
up
be
with
two.
someone and you say,
100%.
hey, like, let's do some business development together tomorrow morning,
Yep.
9 to 11. We're going to blitz the phone and make a little competition between us or whatever.
Yep.
So
Happens all the time.
they're unmuted until someone gets a connect and then they're mute. Like, is
Yep.
that how it
Yeah.
physically works? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they're listening into each other's calls. I think that's brilliant because that's how it would work in an office, right? If you're in a pod with four desks, let's say, you're going to hear each other on the phone, right? And you're going to pick up little, you're going to say, hey, I like the way Sam s
Yes.
asked that question, or I'm going to use that, or that's genius. I love it.
Yeah, well, that's actually, one of the other points around culture for remote is the systems. Like
Okay.
you can't operate a remote team and have a good culture if you think that people are just gonna, bang out calls on their cell phone and go to a meeting once in a while, like you would in an office. In an office, fine, whatever. You're sitting at your desk, you're on your computer. You don't need a lot. But I constantly invest in different systems that give them more opportunity to be engaged. So, our phone system, everyone can hear everyone's calls. Everything gets recorded, and we encourage people to listen to other calls. So I'm a sales rep, right? And there's a candidate that gets submitted to me by a recruiter. Well, great, right? You have the resume, you have the write-up, but you weren't in the office, you didn't hear that recruiter talk to that candidate, and so that you missed that element. So all you have to do is go into the candidate record in Bullhorn. There's a link to the recording, and you can listen to the pre-screen. And it's probably 50% of the time. Sales rep will reach out to the recruiter and be like, hey, in your pre-screen, they said they use Okta, but we need someone who scripts with Okta. Can you give them a call back and ask them if they've done it? And then it's amazing. So phone
Fantastic.
calls, emails, it's just there's a lot of system investment that we made to make sure that people have access to each other.
Can you? I love this topic. Can we spend longer on this? Because I think now that the majority of recruiting businesses are remote, at least part of the time, if not fully remote, you sound like you've really thought about this and you've been very intentional about creating systems and giving people opportunities to enhance their ability to perform well and actually enjoy their job whilst in a remote culture. So, like you gave the example of all the calls are recorded and people can listen to each other's calls. That's a brilliant idea. What other systems have you put in place?
So my absolute favorite system is a platform called Miro. And I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a collaboration tool. It's online, web-based. Our ATS system is Bullhorn, and Bullhorn's great. They do a lot of good stuff, but the biggest issue in being remote that I saw is the board meeting. And you can get on the Zoom call in the morning and everyone talks about what they're working on. But the board meeting in a traditional office, you've got everything up there. You've got all your recs, who's working on what? You've got the whiteboard and the pen. Like that's where magic happens. And so I knew I had to replicate that. And so Miro has been what I've used to replicate that. So on Miro, it took a lot of time to get it to where is was great. But we have this like massive Kanban workflow with each open order. Each account manager has their own, and it's just all broken out really, really smooth and seamless. And so Miro is one of my favorite. It helps us, have our rec meetings that we have every day and prioritize. And then
So
we have
wait.
a yeah.
So okay. So Miro is the technology, and it's basically a Kanban board that you move the recs through the process, right? But then so that's the technology you're using, but what's the process? How do you run those meetings effectively? You said this is is it like a daily stand-up, basically, or?
Yeah.
And how long do those meetings last? When do they happen? And what's the agenda? How do you drive that to make it productive so that it fires people up and doesn't bore people to tears?
The age, my daily problem. So basically, we iterate this all the time. And that's another big piece. If anyone is listening to what I have to say, who knows? But
by the way, we'll get at least 1,000 people listening to this.
Oh,
maybe
cool.
Maybe 1,500, 1,800, something like that.
Well, hopefully I don't drag you down. I don't know.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I think you have to iterate all the time. We iterate all the time. Everything. And maybe we'll go one way and then we go back, but we're constantly iterating. And that helps not just find what's the best, but also because this stuff gets monotonous, right? So to your point, like, how do we make sure people stay engaged? So one is, like, we iterate, we change it a lot. But basically the way that it works is everyone jumps on Zoom. It happens at 9 a.m. Pacific. It's called our check-in call. Everyone across the country logs in. We're in every time zone. So the Central Coast and East Coast time zones all have their own kind of check-in to the day where they all get on. And it's nothing more than walking into the office when you walk in the office, you don't just like open your computer. You say hi to your peers. So
yeah.
You know, so they have a check-in, like everyone has sat down at their desk, and let's acknowledge that we all started working. And it's not for me. It's not a trust thing at all. You know, it's just so they know, like, they're not alone.
That's cool. We actually do this. We do that over Slack because we're 100% remote as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have in our Slack channel, then people say good morning. They share like what hours they're working, because people work different.
Yeah.
People, it's flexible, so people can work whatever hours they want as long as there's overlap when we're collaborating on stuff. But and then when people leave or, you know, are going for the weekend, then for sure, because otherwise it feels strange. You're just sitting here by yourself, right?
Exactly.
And you might not speak to anyone of your team during the day, so that is important. So so you have the check-in in the morning, but then this 9 a.m. check-in, which is the whiteboard meeting.
Yeah. So everyone logs into Zoom. And then everyone pulls up Miro on Chrome, you know. So, and the cool thing about Miro, and by the way, it's Miro has thousands of capabilities. We use it for 5 or 6 other applications on that, you know, page, but the main whiteboard section is a Kanban, so everyone, you know, is following along, and you can see everyone's mouse moving with their name. It's really cool. And so you're on Zoom, and we basically have it broken down by account manager, and we start with one account manager. They give us any updates, any new orders, any priorities they have, and what they expect to close this week. And we kind of break that down, and recruiters are engaged. They're asking questions. And then recruiters basically lay out where their priorities are going to be based on the account manager's priorities. So recruiter A is going to work on this. And so we basically do that for that meeting. Should only last about 15 minutes. So it's 9 to 9:15.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately after that, we have a sales breakout room and a recruiting breakout room. So they all understand, lay of the land, what they're working on, who's doing what. And then they go into their breakout rooms to talk strategy on how they're going to approach things, any problems. That's another 15-minute open session. And then after that, so it's a 30-minute window. And then after that, if needed, let's say, you know, Neil brings in a brand new role. It's a little complex. He wants to spend some time talking about it with the recruiters. Then Neil will jump into his specific breakout room. Recruiters can jump in and ask questions and get up to speed.
Okay, awesome. I love it. It sounds like you've got a split desk model where you have account managers and recruiters. Okay, so that's interesting. So coming back to systems then was our theme that we're running with here, Sam. So theme for building culture, creating engagement, creating collaboration, keeping people like they feel like they're part of something and they're not just, you know, isolated. What else do you do there?
Well, I think there's two things. One is you have to have a very, well, we have a very, very like hard line of what our core values are. And I live by those. Before I even hired anyone, I wrote these down. And these are things that have guided me and have helped me be successful. So we have our core values. And everyone talks about them all the time. If someone does something that aligns with the core value, someone else will say, dude, that was, you know, awesome. You know, pressure, pressure's a privilege. And I can tell you what they are. But
yeah.
But then the second big thing is I try to have fun. You know, I can be the leader, right? And I'm everyone's boss and I can be serious. But I try to have fun and keep people engaged. So our checkout calls, we have a Zoom meeting, not every day, but generally every day. Fridays are different. Wednesdays are different. But we have a checkout call based on your time zone. Pacific and Mountain are on the same, and Central and East Coast are on the same. And like those checkout calls, if you want to talk about a win that you had, great. Mm. But like, we'll get on and play Scribble. I don't even know. I just learned what that was recently, but like we'll play games, you know, people who somebody leads that meeting each week. So somebody different, there's a rotation. And I think this week it was, Monday was like, hey, everyone take a picture of their sink, under their sink. And then we'll guess whose is whose.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's small things like that. They're quick meetings. But again, it's just another thing of like when you walk out of the office, you're saying bye, right? Like, you know, there's no like, okay, I'm done, you know?
Exact. You know, my colleague Leanne is brilliant at coming up with ideas like that for our weekly team meetings, just to keep them fresh. And so people don't, you know, people have to stay engaged and people can't just zone out. And it's awesome. So sometimes they'll be sharing a win, like a personal win or a work win, but she comes up with lots of other stuff. So you've got, we'll talk about values in a sec, but you have your check-in call, you've got your check-out call, you've got your work sesh. Any other kind of fixtures in the week where there are opportunities for people to, you know, that are building culture while increasing performance?
Building culture, yes. Increased performance, I don't know what the direct correlation is, but on I think people like it and they enjoy it. One of the other issues I saw is that people would get stuck in their office, their desk chair. And, you know, again, I don't know how other people work. I tend to sit down and not leave my desk. Now, someone may be, you know, lounging on the sofa for a while and I, you know, who knows, but I saw that kind of becoming an issue. And so what we did is we created Wednesday walk day. And so we have a midday call that breaks up the day. It's 1 o'clock Pacific. For the Central and East Coast, it's kind of the end of their day, but everyone takes that meeting on their cell phone and outside walking. And so it's that, you know, we have a different topics each week, but it's Wednesday walk day and they've loved that.
That's an awesome idea. It's funny, so two of my colleagues, Julie and Leanne, both love walking outside and they'll often do their meetings together walking. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so let's get into the values then. And by the way, an episode you might be interested in, Sam, I interviewed a fantastic British entrepreneur, technology recruitment agency. His name is Simon LaFosse. I think they've got about 300 team members now. And I spent quite a lot of time talking to him about values. And one of the things that they do is they have, you know, along with celebrating kind of financial wins and KPIs and stuff like that, they also celebrate values. That's like a category, but it's voted by your colleagues. So basically, if you see somebody or, you know, experience somebody embodying or living one of the values, then you send an email to the email address, who it was, which value, and the specifics about what they did. And then those people get recognized and celebrated at the kind of weekly. And then you also, there's like an annual thing based on, you know, the cumulative, who got the most values points kind of thing. So they really recognize it. And it's also, of course, considered in terms of, you know, promotion and all that kind of stuff.
I love that. And that actually solves a problem. I'm gonna listen to that, but I'll also think about, you know, how we can do that. We used a product called Nectar. It's an employee engagement tool, and it was great. I mean, we got a lot of engagement out of it, and basically did the same thing. You could recognize people. The problem was that it was a separate system, and it didn't integrate G Suite or any of our other systems.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a second thought. And so I like this, but we do a end of year award. One of my good friends who passed away a handful of years ago is this guy, Chaz Patterson. And so the award is Chaz Patterson. And he was just like the funniest guy in the room, you know, great guy. But so it's the award goes to the person that embodies our core values all year long, who's just like bringing it from a positivity standpoint, you know, just living the values. So
amazing.
We do it yearly, but I love that weekly.
Yeah, like more frequently, because yours a long time, right?
Yeah.
What are the values then?
Number one is the power of attitude. And it's just all about attitude. I just always preach this. You are the only one that's in control of your output is what I say. Mm-hmm. And then like the definition, if you Google the power of attitude, see if I can get this right. Our lives are not determined by what happens to us, but how we react to what happens. And so I talk about this. I tell them, like, you know, roll up your sleeves, let go of what's uncontrollable. Don't be the victim. Just be in control and set your attitude, because it's one of the only things you can control. And so it's the power of attitude. Feedback is like a huge pillar for us. And so it's feedback, and it's giving effective feedback, taking feedback. So it's a two-way street. And that's one of the things that I lead with. I'm giving people feedback, and I'm always asking for feedback. And so if someone sees something they don't like, they don't wallow in it. Tell that person what they did and how they can improve. Maybe it was a bad cold call, right? Like, don't just let them have a bad cold call. Tell them. Give that feedback. And then, you know, if someone does something great, tell them. So feedback is huge. Always constant communication, transparency on everything. So power of attitude, feedback. Pressure is a privilege. That's like another big one for me.
What does that mean to you?
Yeah. I want people to face the pressure. I want people to run towards their legacy, like not away from it. And so like, what does it mean? It means like, how is every game, you think about an NBA game, how is every game winning shot made? right? It's at the buzzer. That pressure is at the max. And if you don't have an opportunity to take that shot under the most insane amount of pressure, you're never going to hit the winning shot. You're just on the bench, right? And so I tell them when they start getting stressed out and they've got a deal that the candidate is asking for $20,000 more than what we can pay, and everyone's being a nightmare, and they're just like stressed. I remind them, look, it's a privilege. If you're not here, you're not going to close a deal. So it's a privilege. Pressure is a privilege.
Interesting. All right.
And then the
Awesome.
last one is freedom and responsibility. And we kind of talked about that, but I just firmly believe that people are the best managers of themselves. And we're here, we help them, we're always available, but it's full on freedom and responsibility. Be the best boss of yourself.
There's so many directions we could go from here, Sam, but I'm just conscious of time and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here. So I promised that we would talk about the current market because we have quite a few clients who are in tech, and 2023 has been a weird year. What are you seeing? Because you have a larger team, so you're seeing a bigger cross section of the market. What are you seeing? And then secondly, how are you adapting?
It's tough. This market is tough. I mean, I think overall tech, the tech sector at least, taking marketing out for a moment, I think we had like a net reduction of 2,600, open positions. Unemployment, it's weird because unemployment in the US at least is super low, but I think for tech and marketing, it's a little arbitrary. I think we're closer to 5-6%, where overall US unemployment is 3.9. And so I think that there's this big disconnect in the industry, in the market, between what candidates have expected from a compensation standpoint over the last few years to what companies have the ability to pay. And that's slowly merging, and that will eventually merge, and the market in general will become healthier. People will start accepting jobs. I think there's a big portion of unemployed that are not looking, which doesn't calculate into the unemployment number. And I think once that absorption happens, then you'll see a heavier reliance on recruiters for access to talent. I think right now, for direct hire, at least in tech, you can throw a job description out there and you'll get 60 open position 60 open candidates. And that's hard, right? I mean, some customers understand, I don't want to review 60. I want to pay a fee to have three that are perfect fits, right? The normal value add. But I think there's just not an overall need for recruiters, for agency recruiters right now, which is being slowed down by, blockchain, crypto being crippled over the last year, every other industry. And so as that kind of gets back, you'll see it go back. I don't know. Do you think it'll go back to 2021? I don't know.
I mean, the overall trend is always upward, right? If you look over a 10, 20-year period. So, yeah, no doubt we will get back. But in the meantime, it can be painful, right? While you're grinding and you're not getting the return, you're getting a lot more rejection, you're getting a lot more like clients saying, "Hey, we're not hiring," or "We can do it ourselves," or what have you. So to you, one of your values is the power of attitude. How are you coaching your team to stay positive in the face of, they are doing the work, so they may be, I'm assuming anyway, because of course that's a different problem. If people's output isn't sufficient, the quality or the quantity of their activity isn't enough, then that's a different conversation. But if they are really going for it, they're doing high quality, you know, outreach and, you know, in sufficient numbers, but they're still not getting, you know, the orders, how are you coaching them to sort of stay positive? What's the message that you're telling your team?
Well, it's tough. And so I try not to give them empty messaging. I try to prove to them that it is possible. And so what I try to do is like highlight success from others. So if somebody is struggling and they're doing amazing output and they have a great attitude, all of those things you just described, and someone else is doing the same thing and then they get lucky, I demonstrate that. I remind them of that. Another thing that I say all the time is the harder you work, the luckier you will get. And so I just, you know, I can try to motivate, but like, I think the best use case is when they see someone get lucky. And sometimes when, and this happened over the last 12 months, it was just kind of people were getting down and starting to believe that they couldn't do it. And not that they couldn't do it, but that it couldn't be done. So I don't run a book I haven't run a book for 3 years. So I got in, I got my hands dirty, and I know, you know, I'm a sales guy and I'm not like a CEO expert. Like I didn't go to B school, you know, I'm just a sales guy at heart. And so I just put that hat back on and I brought in this fantastic ed tech customer, and that was a, you know, 3 month pursuit. And so that's what I use when people are struggling. It's like, you can do it. You just got to keep going. You got to stay focused. Gotta iterate.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there is business out there. There's always opportunity. We just need to put ourselves in the best possible position to capture it. Yeah. And at the same time, remember that like it's a marathon, not a sprint. We're building networks, building relationships, building our brand so that, you know, when the market, you know, accelerates again, you're there to capture that growth and be the go-to recruiter. And the only way you can do that is just keep doing the right things day in, day out. Sam, listen, this has been fun. I feel like we could go on for another hour here, but I'm glad we did this. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, right on. Thanks, Mark. This was great.
Awesome. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Thanks, Mark.